This is a Triple J podcast.
Hack. Hey, it's Dave Marchese. This is the Hack Podcast. Do you find it easy to talk to your mates about money? Because finances can put a strain on friendships. There's no doubt about that. How do you reckon you and your friends would go challenging yourselves to be as stingy as possible? Kind of the opposite of some of the issues people generally have. Like you're being really tight on purpose. It's a good thing. It's not Feb fast, it's not Dry July, we're talking about Penniless March, an idea that's popped up. Later we're going to be speaking to a group of mates who've been doing it a whole month without tapping their cards, spending on frivolous things, or really spending at all. How easy has it been? How are they finding it? We'll fill you in. Also coming up, the plan to make politics more youth friendly. The government's been banging on about doing this for ages. How's it actually progressing? First, though.
Hack. There's pressure on the federal government to update religious discrimination laws.
On Triple J.
Yeah, religious discrimination laws. It's been a while since we've covered this issue on Hack. For a while, it was all the headlines were about. Massive in 2022 when the former Morrison government tried to make changes to protect religious people from discrimination. But Scott Morrison faced a revolt from some of his own MPs. You might remember this. They voted against it, worried about the impact it would have on queer students. Then the issue kind of disappeared. But the religious discrimination debate is back because the current Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says he will bring it up for a vote in Parliament again, but only if the opposition agrees to back it. It's a lot to get across, so here's reporter Ellie Grounds with an update.
Anthony Albanese has been pretty consistent on the Labor Party's plan to bring in religious discrimination laws, both before he became PM.
To implement the policies that I'm taking to this election, whether it be cheaper childcare, a religious discrimination act, this term, and I'll be held to account.
And after.
We will address the issues of religious discrimination and the need to legislate there. We will do that during the term of Parliament.
And now, nearly two-thirds of the way through this parliamentary term, the debate is back. A bit of the backstory here. In early 2022, the then Prime Minister Scott Morrison tried to get a religious discrimination bill through Parliament.
There is no standalone legislation to protect people of religion or faith against discrimination, or indeed for those who choose not to have a faith or religion.
The idea was it would protect religious groups' right to express their beliefs and make decisions in line with those beliefs. So, for example, a Catholic school could preference hiring Catholic teachers, and that wouldn't be classed as discrimination against other teachers. But the sticking point has long been whether this kind of law would okay discrimination against the LGBTQIA+ community, and especially if it would allow religious schools to refuse to admit or even expel trans students. And the last time it was debated, five Liberal MPs who were in government just weren't willing to cop that.
For a trans child, the impact of this legislation, which leaves them open to bullying, exclusion, sacking or expulsion, could well lead to higher rates of self-harm, harm and poor mental health. And why on earth would we want to inflict that upon anyone?
I cannot stand by and do anything which sends anything other than a message from this Parliament that we want to embrace you, we want to love you, we want to support you and we want to nurture you.
In Parliament, those MPs crossed the floor and voted against their own party. So in the end, the Morrison government shelved the draft legislation. Now, something that looks kind of like it is back on the agenda. But there's a catch.
We're aiming to reach a bipartisan outcome.
Albanese's promise has always been that his government would amend existing anti-discrimination laws to protect students and teachers, but still allow religious schools to preference people of their particular faith when they're hiring. And we're expecting the Australian Law Reform Commission's final answer on how to do this tomorrow. But Albo is now saying he won't go ahead with the bill unless it gets the opposition's support.
Arguing if there isn't agreement, now's not the time to have the debate, given the rise of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia.
But opposition leader Peter Dutton says the coalition can't make that promise if it hasn't even seen the government's proposal.
What he wants to be able to do is to walk out of this process and say, oh, I gave it every good effort, but you know, unfortunately the coalition didn't support it on a bipartisan basis. Therefore, I'm running away from it. I'm not arguing for it. It's not our policy.
But the head of the country's largest association of Christian schools, which will definitely be impacted by whatever happens, reckons getting the opposition's support shouldn't be too hard.
Bipartisan support is not only a good thing, but it's actually very achievable. We know that the government's wanting to amend that to include anti-vilification provisions, which I think faith groups have come to accept. If we take that 2020 bill with those anti-vilification provisions, we've got a clear basis for very simple passage of legislation through the Parliament.
Hack on Triple J.
Ellie Grounds with that update. Want to get into this chat a bit more. With us now is Bridget Archer, one of the Liberal MPs who voted against the draft legislation for this bill last time. She is with us now. Bridget Archer, thanks for coming on Hack.
Oh, hi Dave. Thanks for having me.
Do you think Australia has a problem with religious people being discriminated against?
Well, certainly I think there is some evidence to support that. And of course, we all, I think, would agree that everybody should be free from discrimination on the basis of any of those or any attributes, really. So, I think it is reasonable to have protections for people of faith, as it is reasonable to have protections from discrimination for LGBTIQ plus communities as well.
Okay. Well, as we just heard, the last time Parliament looked at this was when your party was in power and Scott Morrison was the Prime Minister, and you famously didn't support the proposal then. Can you explain why you didn't support it? What were the reasons?
Yes, well, at the time, notably what I said was that Tasmania, my home state, fought for a long time to achieve really good, in fact, renowned anti-discrimination legislation that does provide protections for all sorts of people. And this proposed legislation would have overridden and, in fact, watered down the protections that people in my state currently already enjoy. So that was my main motivation for not supporting it at the time.
I'm wondering if you think, if you've said, that there is room for more protection for religious people, is there a way that you think both can be achieved, that you can protect religious people from discrimination, also prevent religious schools from banning or expelling kids who might be gay or non-binary or trans?
Yeah, I think it is achievable, but I think it is up to the government, ultimately to put those matters forward. And we're not yet clear what they are intending to do. They told us today in question time that they have prepared two pieces of legislation. Of course, we haven't seen those at this stage, but we're not sure whether they're going to bring them forward because they're saying they will need some sort of commitment to bipartisanship. I'm not sure how that is practical. In the normal course of events, the government would put forward their legislative agenda or put it out for consultation at least, and then they would gauge the support they have or work to collaborate or amend that legislation or seek to improve it.
I mean, what the government is saying is that it doesn't want a harmful debate on this at this particular moment. It doesn't want to talk about it in Parliament unless the coalition agrees to the plan because there's a lot of Islamophobia, anti-Semitism in the community right now. Is that fair enough that, it's not the best time maybe to be addressing this issue if tensions are high, if there's a risk of stoking further divisions? Can you see it from the Prime Minister's point of view?
I certainly think that it is important to have an eye to social cohesion and trying to manage those issues. But at the same time, when is the right time to have it? Because as we have seen as well, and I would almost guarantee if we were going to have this debate again, it would lead to the same sort of really unpleasant, really hateful and really harmful language that we have seen in the debates previously around LGBTIQ plus communities as well. So, yes, I think it is difficult. It has proven difficult previously to have these sort of debates. But the government made a promise that they would, if they were elected, that they would address these issues, both in terms of the issue around religious discrimination and also around protecting LGBTIQ students and parents, students and teachers.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Liberal MP Bridget Archer about religious discrimination laws, whether we could see changes here before the next federal election. Bridget Archer, do you think bipartisanship is realistic on this issue? Like, we've heard that talks are happening now. Do you honestly think that we could see the coalition, the government coming together and agreeing on a way forward here?
Well, this is the job of the parliament. This is why the parliament exists, for legislation to be brought forward by the government, to be debated on the floor of the House of Representatives and in the Senate, to be amended or sought to be amended if required, through, you know, a collaborative process, and at some point arrive at a decision. And that is the will of the parliament. I mean, that's the normal sort of course of these things. And so it's quite extraordinary for the government to suggest that they would seek some sort of level of commitment before going through that process. That's just not how it works. Senator Pocock this morning, when I was talking with him about it, made the point also that there are a number of other people across the political spectrum, not just the coalition as well, that are important stakeholders in terms of making these decisions. So I'm not really sure what the government is trying to do in relation to this, but if they have legislation prepared, then I would encourage them to, at the very least, put that out for consultation and let people assess what they do think about it. And then that gives us all an opportunity to try and move it forward.
Do you have any message to, I don't know, someone who's trans or gay or non-binary who's listening right now and in a religious school? What would you say to them?
Look, my message to anybody would be the same, you know, that you are valued and that you are cared for, and that I'm sorry that you have to continue to listen to the negative and divisive commentary that so often accompanies these debates, and you do deserve to have some certainty about what the future looks like, and all Australians should be free from discrimination, and we should all work together for those aims.
Bridget Archer, just before you go, both you and independent Senator David Pocock have been named the winners of a prestigious prize. It's called the MacKinnon Prize, and you were named the winner for standing up to your principles. How does that make you feel? Is it worth all of the intense media coverage, the backlash, the fighting within your party? Is it worth all of that to win an award like that?
Look, it's a real honour to win the award, and I really appreciate the aims of the MacKinnon Institute, which is to sort of enhance our democracy and to increase trust and confidence in our elected officials, because I think that's really, really important. But also for me, you know, standing up for those things has its own reward. And in the case that we're just talking about, I mean, the religious discrimination that came before the last parliament, you know, the stories I heard from people that were going to be affected, that are currently affected, that are currently in the situation as you described, will stay with me forever. And to be able to play a part in stopping that bill as it was proposed from proceeding, you know, was worth it by itself.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, Hack, to put your views forward, and for speaking with us, giving us the time. Liberal MP Bridget Archer, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And some messages coming through. Someone says, I'd want the most qualified teacher to get the job, not a mediocre teacher with a strong faith. And Callum from Geelong says, I'm a gay man, very passionate about queer community rights, but don't understand how the Liberal Party is meant to support something that they haven't seen.
Hack. We know that good policy decisions are made when people are engaged in the decisions that affect them.
On Triple J.
We're going to stay on politics for a little bit, because despite what politicians say, we just heard from a politician there, but maybe you think, I don't feel like my voice is getting heard. The issues that I feel are important are being addressed in the parliament, whether it's cost of living, climate change, housing. The government has previously said it's committed to making sure young Australians have their voices heard, and it wants to put a youth strategy in place. So where is that at? Because it's been a while since we've spoken about this. Apparently, the government's been sending representatives out to music festivals, to bike tracks, figure out the issues that are important to young people. I'm fascinated to hear how that's gone. Shalala Madora has been catching up with the youth minister, as well as those young people who are steering the conversation.
My family is really against politics. They don't like talking about politics at home.
This is Anagia. He just turned 20, is studying economics and foreign policy at uni, and for the last year or so, he's been travelling the country, listening to young people's concerns about politics.
It really just struck me that there must be something that needs to be done so that they can live the life they want. So that's pretty much what draws me to, like, the political sphere.
Anagia is part of the federal government's Youth Steering Committee, a group of 15 young people who've helped the government create a new strategy to talk with and hear from young Australians.
It's a really great opportunity to put regional, rural, remote young people's perspectives on the table.
Eve from Bathurst is part of that committee too, and says the new strategy had buy-in from heaps of young people.
So we engaged with over 4,600 young people in every state and territory, in cities, in regional, rural, remote communities, and the breadth of consultation, making sure that such a diversity of young people's voices are heard and are represented in this strategy, that's, for me, what's the most important part of it.
Federal Youth Minister Anne Ali says the consultations went to where young people are to make sure they're getting a range of views.
We went to music festivals, we went to Comic-Con. We went to bike tracks where young people are. Wherever young people were, the Office for Youth was there consulting with them.
Okay, so what did the strategy come up with? Firstly, they found out what actually mattered to young people. Here's steering committee member Bella from Adelaide.
The topics that came up that are important to young people are climate change, cost of living and mental health. And also just under 80% of young people want to be included in government decision making.
Climate change has always been the number one issue for Triple J listeners. But this strategy found that cost of living is now top of mind, followed closely by mental health. The strategy promises to promote young people's voices through youth advisory committees, the creation of a National Youth Week, and youth forums. It also requires governments and public service departments to consider the needs of young people when they design policies and programs.
We have a strategy now that hopefully puts young people in contact with government.
The test now is whether anything actually changes. The youth strategy was part of an election promise by Labor to get more young people engaged in politics. It promised to reinstate the Office of Youth and the Youth Advisory Council, both of which were scrapped by Tony Abbott in 2013. Minister Ali says she'll be working directly with youth advisory groups to make sure young people aren't an afterthought in decision making.
This is just a first step to ensuring that young people have a say. The real proof of all of this is when we can have policies that demonstrate that we have listened to young people.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Madora with that update. We'll make sure we keep you across what ends up happening, because I guess it's all well and good to have these plans, but need to make sure that young people do feel like their voices are being heard, so we'll keep checking in.
Hack.
Just trying to minimise how much you're spending and then trying to avoid taking off other people.
On Triple J.
Yeah, we love a month of self-improvement, don't we? Like, surely at some point you've got around Dry July or Feb Fast, Sober October, one of those. What do you think about this challenge, though? No coffees out, no beers, no gigs, not even going to the shop for a few extra ingredients. Could you go a month without tapping your cards, spending any money? You're probably thinking, that's impossible. How would I do that? Well, a group of friends in WA have set themselves a challenge to do it. They're curious to see how this is going to impact their savings, but also their social lives, whether it changes how they're interacting with each other, if they're happier or more depressed. Oh, I'm curious to hear if you think this could be you, if you would like to give it a go. Maybe you've tried something similar with your friends. Get in touch, 0439 757 555. Alice Angeloni has a story.
I'm just grabbing a coffee. I tap my card. There goes another $6. It's not financially savvy, I know, but it's a habit and a ritual with friends and colleagues. So I was intrigued to hear about a group of people about my age where I live in Geraldton who are challenging themselves to stop spending on non-essentials for a whole month.
We had a mate in January that was trying to avoid spending money, and it just sort of gave me the spark for the idea of March to try and do something similar, but to a bit of a further extent.
Feeling a bit inspired, I caught up with 24-year-old physio, Aaron.
My friend Callum here was also reading up on different ways to sort of challenge yourself as well, and the benefits of giving yourself a challenge throughout your life and just getting uncomfortable.
They're calling it Penniless March. For the most part, this group of friends are young professionals, and they acknowledge that going without isn't a choice right now for lots of people. This month, they'll still spend on bills and have a few exceptions.
Because they're something that we can't necessarily control. So bills are an exception, and we're each allowed two different voids that, so sort of exceptions that we can personally choose throughout the month.
Anthea is a speech pathologist and saving her money this month as well.
One of my voids is fresh vegetables, so I can still go out to the local market and get some fresh veg throughout the month. And the other one is fuel for my car because I need it for work.
So buying nothing but some fresh veg, some fuel. The main question on my mind is, what's the motivator here?
I think that with this is a way to keep that focus, but like also bring in that friendship component and try and have as much fun as you can in the month of March without having that kind of money being the thing that's driving the fun.
For them, this challenge is about getting uncomfortable and challenging some social norms around money that have become a big part of our lives. Callum is trying to call out just how much spending goes hand in hand with socialising.
I like kind of challenging the status quo. I will not necessarily dry July, but I've done months where I haven't drunk. But I feel like we've just got these norms of whether it's purchasing certain things or whether it's kind of drinking at every social event that aren't necessarily healthy for us or our mental health. So I feel like this is a great kind of idea just to challenge that and say, is this actually going to make me happy, or is it just because everyone else is doing it?
The Penniless March crew are still catching up with their other mates, like here at their regular cafe. But while their friends are buying coffees, they're just there for the hangout.
I'm trying to just be there and sort of, as Callum mentioned before, just try to break that sort of norm that you can partake in these sort of social events without purchasing things. And not necessarily that that's the reason why we're doing it at all, but just sort of challenging it.
So how are they actually going about cutting their spending for the month?
I think we've gone about it in different ways. We've gone down two separate paths. Prior to the month of March, I made a lot of frozen meals. I've got some bulk sauce, I've got a couple curries, I've got a lasagna, and I've got some shredded chicken. That's sort of the extent of my pre-cooked meals. And I've also got some fresh food as well to make as well. So hopefully that'll get me over the line.
Anthea admits access to the coast off Geraldton will also be a big help.
That's another little challenge I've set myself, that I'll try and go out and spear or catch some fish or some crayfish that we've got so much of here in Geraldton. So I'll be able to use, natural resources that I don't need to go out and buy, and I can have a fun time catching it.
For this Penniless March crew, they don't know how the rest of the month will unfold, but they're certainly hoping they'll end up with more savings.
Hopefully come April, I will have a greater appreciation for where I put that money into local vendors or spending a bit more wisely to survive that cost of living increases.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni with that story. So many interesting messages coming through. Someone on the text line, Jesse from Brisbane, says, I found myself wondering where all my money kept going. Recently, Mum has taken over and gives me an allowance, essentially, really helping me recognise where I'm losing cash. loving the Bank of Mums that's working for Jessie. Amber from Kingscliff says, I would love to do that. Don't think it would be that hard. Different to normal life, but would probably make us happier with less, to be honest. A lot of you also saying, hey, I'm doing this already, but I don't mean to be doing it. It's just because I've got no monies to spend. It is penniless March all the time. Fully here with that. Let's get into this a bit more with a financial therapist, Jane Monica Jones, who can unpack a bit more the psychology behind spending and friendships as well. Jane, thanks for coming on Hack.
Great to be here. Thank you.
What do you think of these trends like the one we just heard of, penniless March, helping young people save some money and maybe form some new financial habits?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I think we're a total culture of spending. So if we're going to turn that around, not only is it going to set people up for the short term, but also the long term as well. So I'm really encouraged by it.
Do you think it can help build sustainable financial habits?
Yes, it does. I mean, you know, there's a lot of research on habit building. You know, if you practice something 21 days, it would pretty much stick with you. Just as the habit of spending has become a bit of a habit that, you know, when I'm bored, when I need to self-soothe, when I want to, you know, feel better about myself, I think saving can be that same habit building piece that we can take on. And it does. It just, we get set for, you know what, I'm not going to spend, I'm going to save instead. So I just think it's all positivity practices there. It's really fantastic.
Well, I was going to ask, is there any negatives to this? Like, could it be a bit of a challenge if you're all of a sudden suddenly changing your habits? Could that have an impact on, I don't know, whether it's your mental health or whatever, if, you know, you're used to spending money, used to having stuff available to you, and then all of a sudden you're not?
Yeah, it does. There's something that, you know, I often work with is our financial saboteur. And that happens when we try to seek change in our life. Our saboteur will come in and, you know, kibosh all our fabulous plans. So what we need to do, if we're going to change something or do something a little bit different, we do a small change rather than a massive. Because if it's massive, like, you know what, I'm going to pay off all my debt, then we leave ourselves short for not having any money for emergencies or maybe even a bit of fun, which is really important for our mental health, we then sabotage our goal of paying off debt. So we need to do little increments and make sure that they're sustainable. Otherwise, we're going to be sabotaging our fabulous, you know, hopes and dreams, basically.
The financial saboteur sounds a bit sinister. I definitely met that that person before, creeping in, trying to get me to do the wrong thing. I wonder, I mean, there's a lot of pressure to spend money through socialising, as we've just heard, Jane, like especially young people feel this need to be spending a lot when they're out with friends. If they don't, they feel like they're not getting the same experience. What's your advice for young Australians who might be struggling with this conundrum?
Yeah, look, it kind of goes to that sort of mental health thing. I think self-esteem is a really important thing that we need to have, not only for our financial well-being, but just, you know, our general mental health. Financial well-being is that capacity to have our beliefs and stick to them, be able to put boundaries up against, you know, those peer pressures. If we're feeling a bit shaky about who we are and our levels of confidence, it's going to be really difficult for us to say, hey, friends, I don't want to participate. So working on things that are really good for our self-esteem and self-confidence is a way that gives us a bit more muscle to put up those financial boundaries that we may need to put up to say, you know what, I'm actually taking the cheap option. I'm not going to come out to dinner or something like that. Wherever we can build up, you know, our confidence in our finances and putting up boundaries is going to really help, you know, because peer pressure is heavy. It's hard. It's hard to say no. We want to get along and we want to be accepted. So working on our self-confidence and our self-esteem is a really good thing to do.
Do you have any advice for people on how to bring up these conversations? If you want to tell your mates, hey, I can't spend what you can because I don't earn as much as you do, or maybe it's the other way as well, how should you do it?
Difficult conversations need to happen in light and good times. When things are light, it's really great to suggest these hard conversations. When we're all emotive and we're feeling overwhelmed, things just don't come out as well. They might not land the way that we want to land. So if we can bring those things up when we're feeling good, that's a good way to do it, rather than when it's Friday night and you know that everybody's going to be ringing and saying, hey, are you going to come out? And you're going, oh, I'm totally overwhelmed. We're just sort of setting ourselves up for failure in that way. So when things are light and good for us in our relationship field or intimate relationship, that's the good time to do hard conversations.
All right. So not necessarily when the bill arrives at the table and you're freaking out. That's not the best time to bring it up. We appreciate your take as always. Jane Monica Jones, financial therapist. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Thanks.
Hack. On Triple J.
And people with some different opinions. Someone says, this is great. It's so true, the social pressure to spend socially. Very frustrating. Ends up putting financial pressure on in other areas. That's what Kaz says. But then someone else says, this is a fantastic way to screw the economy, Penniless March, if everyone gets on board. However, it is a great way to save. And then another person says, not sure the cafe would be impressed with a bunch of people socialising in the cafe and not buying anything. Maybe just socialise at home so the cafe can pay their bills. Hey, that's a fair enough point as well. I doubt you'll be getting many smiles from cafe staff if you're just using up their chairs and not buying anything. It's an interesting point, though, and people are saying they're struggling, they're trying everything out to save some cash, and making it a competition could be an easy way of making it a bit easier. That's all we've got time for on the podcast for now. I'll catch you tomorrow. See ya.